Hey, housewives, come on in. You know the dirty dishes are still in the sink from yesterday and the laundry is still in the basket. Pop your AirPods in and make yourself at home here.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Tori.
And we are your Unlikely Housewives. Stepping out in faith and believing that God calls the unlikely, we are here to show you the appreciation and validation you deserve, lead you to authentic relationships, and release you of believing the cultural lies to restore your faith and wellness.
Pull up those high-waisted yoga pants, tighten your top knot, and reheat your coffee for the third time. Turn up the volume and let's go.
Hey, housewives, welcome back.
Hey, hey.
We are here and excited for yet again another guest, and we have an evening recording. We're usually daytime people.
I know. So it's weird for it to be dark outside in here. Yeah.
But this is so great to be able to have Brittany with us. And she is someone who we both mutually know through friends, but you know her better. So I'll let you introduce.
So this is Brittany Vallis, and she is a entrepreneur, businesswoman, mom of five, and we met, like Tracy said, through a mutual friend when she owned a couple of restaurants at the time. Then we got to hang out at another friend's birthday party and just clicked at that point. So it's just incredible how God brings us all together and just connects the people he wants to connect. And so welcome, Brittany. Well,
thank you so much, Tori. Thank you, Tracy. Yeah. Thank you. It's a wonderful opportunity to speak with you.
Wow. And we're happy you're here. And you are a woman of many talents.
A lot of hats.
A lot of hats. A lot of trades.
And let's start with the hat of five kids.
Okay.
Mama.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sure that is base experience. That's probably your core as having five kids. Tell us their ages.
So my oldest is Ava. She will be 17 next week. Wow. And then I have a 14-year-old son, Ethan, an 11-year-old son, Jack, a 9-year-old daughter, Rose, and a 7-year-old daughter, Charlotte.
Oh, my goodness. So,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I love all their names.
I know.
Those are fun.
Thank you. We certainly did not set out to have five children, but it's what God's plan was.
I did hear you say Jack and Rose, right?
I know.
I'm sorry. I thought of was Titanic. I'm sorry.
That is their forever joke, and it's not on purpose. I know. Okay, so the story goes with that. So my former husband's name is John. And so with his name, Jack is a version of John. So that's why we named him Jack.
Sure.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And when I was pregnant with Rose, oh my gosh, that was a completely different experience. I was originally pregnant with twins and one of them did not work out. And then it was one of those extremely intuitive pregnancies where I knew I was pregnant beforehand. It was confirmed. I knew I was going to have twins before it was confirmed.
Wow.
I knew the day the twin didn't work out. Like, wow. I knew it was going to be a girl. Like, it was such an unbelievable God experience through this pregnancy.
Yeah.
And there was one night we were trying to figure out a name and we just couldn't put it together. And so I woke up at 3 a.m. and it was like this name just kept pounding in my head, Rose, Rose. And I had never considered it, but it just wouldn't stop. And I'm like, okay, Rose, Rose. And so I started playing with different middle names. I did think about Titanic. I was like, we have an older brother, Jack, Jack and Rose. And I was like, but if it just feels so right, it just felt, I don't know, like, and I never considered the name. And then as soon as I brought it up to John, I was like, what do you think about this name? Instantly, he was on board instantly. And I'm like, okay, well, we're just going to have Titanic babies.
I love that.
I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't think Jack and Rose.
Instantly,
because
I'm sorry.
I am the Titanic like buff of all things. And like I saw the movie 6 times in the theater as a kid.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. It was a slight obsession. And I even saw it in the movie theater on the anniversary of the day that it sunk. At the time, it would have been sinking.
Oh my gosh.
That's my one. I'm like, so that's,
yeah.
See, the Titanic is just so incredible.
Well, and it's funny because as they're getting older, I'm just thinking of this as you mentioned it, but Rose's hair is actually turning more strawberry blonde. And so she's getting into that red, like Rose in the movie, she had red hair.
Is it curly?
It's not. It's yeah. not. So Jack has more of the curly wave. So he's got that look to him.
But that's funny. Awesome. Yeah. How funny. So funny. It's fun to have those little stories about our children.
It is. I love that, though, the intuitiveness. So naturally, intuition is part of who you are.
It is. And it's, yeah, that pregnancy in particular, it was a very different and very wild. But she has the personality of two children. So we often say, your twin is inside of you somehow.
Yeah. I feel like I see another side of one of my children. Yeah. That could be it.
That could be it.
Maybe. Or a demon. I'm not sure.
It's one or the other.
It's fine. So you're here to, like, again, we just sat before we started this. We should have started recording way earlier because we were talking about all these wonderful things. And I mean, talking about going through trauma and how to navigate relationships and work and home life in the middle of that. And then we are also talking about the business, like what it looks like in business failures and how we can change the stigma of that and the differences between men and women in the workplace and how we tackle those things. Like, so, I mean, we kind of tackled it all and like got a good snapshot. Again, sad that we didn't
record earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we can still hit on some of
Yes.
So let's start with, obviously, we were talking about the mom hat. That mm-hmm. was what you wore very first and probably proudest. Entrepreneurship.
Yes.
Huge in starting businesses and being a part. Take us back to where that came from. Was that something you always wanted to do, or did you naturally come into that?
Well, I think that there's a piece of it that's just in your blood, and it's there from the beginning, and it manifests in very different ways depending on what your life looks like at the mm-hmm. time. So for me, I mean, it came in different ways. I mean, there's a different entrepreneurial spirit you can have even as a stay-at-home mom. What are you doing to create with your kids? What kind of environment, what kind of structure? That takes an entrepreneur spirit. What kind of home are you creating? So it's kind of a very similar parallel world if you look at it in that light. Mm-hmm. You're not bringing home actual physical dollar bills, but you're still creating a result based off of your efforts and your structure and your mindset and the philosophy of your business, of your home, your mission statement. I mean, your core values, it all comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, Proverbs 31 woman is a businesswoman. The way that it describes her handling the home life, she handles it as a business. She has employees, she runs it, and that's a business organization. So, like, you can very well, which goes back to Mel and
that's the Hashies too,
because they talk
strong family project.
Yes, mm-hmm. and that is very something similar that we can bring into. But
absolutely,
go on.
Yeah, so I think there was that piece that's just been ingrained through being a mother, and then the creative mindset. I've always been, even as a child, you can see very early on, I've always had big ideas and just having the motivation intrinsically on how to go for those ideas. I don't know. I've never been afraid of a challenge. And the greater the possibility of the results, the greater the challenge, I'm like, oh, this will be fun. Let's just do this. Mm-hmm. And so many examples throughout life of those. I self-studied at age 17 to become a certified pharmacy technician for fun for 6 weeks. I know, like, who does that for fun? I did that. And like in college, I graduated in exactly 3.5 years. My counselor was like, you need 127 hours to graduate. Here's your plan. And it's going to take you 5 years. And I was like, no, it's not. I'm going to redo it. And so I redid it. Graduated 3.5 with exactly to the number 127 hours.
Wow. You're my soul sister because I graduated in 3 years.
Really?
I mean, yes, because I took so many extra classes, like, and I
wasn't that because you were ready to get married?
Part of it was. Yeah. I graduated college and then 2 weeks later got married.
Oh my gosh,
so
I love that.
That was a lot. And my dad's only requirement for Andrew asking me, he's like, she has to get her degree first.
Oh my gosh.
So
I love that.
Work that in. But I would take like 21 hours or 18 hours and just stacked it all. So, but
yes. And planned a wedding on top.
It's fine. I was younger.
The things we could do when we were younger.
Oh my gosh.
Just if our brain capacity had.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It's
very much so.
But I think that spirit of trying to take something and then create it and bring your own spin to it is just mm-hmm. something that's intrinsic within you from the day one. I think you have those qualities and characteristics. So fast forward like a million years, and then we're like to 2019. I was married for 15 years and together, I think 17, 16, I don't remember now, 16, 17 years. And at the time, my former husband worked for a company and it was a fantastic company. It really provided a wonderful life for us. And then that career expired in 2019. And we were just trying to figure out what's next, what's going on next. And that's where we came together on it. I've had the entrepreneur, I had like these plans and ideas where one day maybe we can have this kind of business, or I've dabbled in businesses in the past. I've done some marketing as a chief marketing officer for a company for a little bit. I just did different things over the years. That's where we really went big time into entrepreneurship. We found another Broken Egg Cafe, and I'm the one that ate there first. And I was like, hey, I'm the one that had the idea of it. And so then we did the due diligence together and decided it was the great match for our family because we had five kids and he's always wanted a restaurant. He always wanted a bar. And so we're like, breakfast, it's great hours. Let's just make this happen. And so we did. And we took that plunge and it was a great experience. Life happens. And we ended up getting a divorce in 2020, the end of it. And afterwards, our original plan was to continue to partner together for that restaurant after a divorce. That's not the best idea.
You need some breathing room. You need breathing room.
You too. Yeah, that's fair. You too. Like, that's great, an idealistic idea, but no, not right when you get a divorce. So we were very respectful in how we engaged with that. And I was a stay-at-home mom as well for a while in between doing all my consulting and different things that I did. And we decided that I was a better fit for the restaurant because with his fabulous resume, he could go out and get any kind of job, whereas for mine, I would struggle. So I took it over and I had a lot of fun with it and I became sole owner and it was an unbelievable ride. It was fantastic.
Gosh, 2020 and 2019, was something going on there? I don't remember, like this national.
I was going to say, we haven't talked about that.
Like that pandemic.
I think there might have been a heat wave.
Something like that. I don't know. Climate change. I heard climate change happened.
There might have been some climate change happening. Yeah.
You really started the restaurant in 2019.
No, 2020, 6 weeks before COVID. We started the process in 2019, but we opened it. Our opening day was January 20th, 2020, and then March
14th.
Wow.
That was the same week. Okay, so we had the restaurant and the timing of it, it just was the timing. It was what it was. So we had built a house. So that same week, we shut down the restaurant because of COVID. We had our house closed. So we closed on our house we'd been building for 9 months. And at the same time, we decided to get a divorce all in 1 week.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a wild week.
Well, I have to say, I mean, at least you started COVID knowing you wanted a divorce. I mean, most people ended up getting a divorce out of COVID.
Well, interestingly, it's unfortunate it happened during the year of COVID because there were a lot of assumptions that it was because of COVID.
Yeah.
And anyone who's been married a long time, you're not going to get a divorce over like a 5 minute situation. Yeah. It's something that is brought on by years and years of situations.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Well, so let's talk about divorce is happening and it does feel like it happens more often. And people say the divorce rate is 50%, which statistics, they can't really judge that. That is not really 50%. So don't judge a book by its cover, guys. Because of the no-fault divorce laws, made it really easy for people to get divorced. But at the same time, like, how do we support our friends going through a situation like that when you can pray for them as much as you can and say,
absolutely,
like, try to work it out. God loves marriage, but at the end of the day, it's still their decision.
It is. I think there's a number of different ways you can support a friend through it. I know that I did not understand it until I went through it. And I didn't understand that until I've been divorced now for over 3 years. And my understanding of my marriage and everything that's happened since then, and then who I am now and who my former husband is now and my family now, completely 180 degrees difference. But it took all of that for me to learn all of it. So as far as your friends go and how to support them, it is their path and their journey. I think that's the number one thing to remember and understand. It's not your path and it's not your journey. And every person that has a perspective with it within the marriage, they're coming from their own their own chosen perspective, their worldview. And through that lens, it's going to take from them, yeah, their faith, number one, but it's also going to take their past experiences, their genetic profile, their upbringing, their childhoods, their experiences together, the cycles that maybe they didn't acknowledge that went awry in their marriage that maybe had they acknowledged early on could have been a different outcome or could have adjusted differently. There's so many things going on and so many things behind closed doors that nobody can understand. And as a good example, my former husband and I, we looked like the perfect couple. We had the perfect family. We were the power couple together. We were amazing together. And when we decided to get a divorce, it was a shock. It was a shock to my family. It was a shock to his family. It was a shock to everybody. But nobody knew.
Right. They didn't know what's going on when you close the door.
Nobody knows. And I'm not saying it was this horrible, bad experience. I'm not saying that at all. He's a wonderful man. But at the end of the day, nobody knows what insecurities you're not sharing with people. Nobody knows the different things that you're going through that you're experiencing together. You don't know what he's experiencing. Nobody knows that stuff. We don't go around, we talk to our friends and go, today I feel a little bit sad. We don't do that.
Well, and especially men. I mean, that vulnerability state is not as exposed publicly, even to family. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. The conversations that happen at home or don't happen at home because they hold everything in, other people couldn't know.
No.
Unless they were living with you. I don't know.
Right. I'll fly on the wall.
Yeah.
I think there's a few key things to note and just kind of understand that if you do have a friend that's going through a divorce, number one, she is working through, it's literally a death of a life while nobody's actually died. So it's a very traumatic thing that takes a long time. She has to recreate her entire identity. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't feel grounded because it doesn't feel normal for a long time. She doesn't feel comfortable in her skin for a very long time. So she might present different sides of her personality that you don't recognize at times. But that's not because it's anything bad. It's that she's trying to learn who she is again. Mm-hmm. She's trying to identify the qualities and characteristics she wants to take with her from her former life.
Right.
And what she wants to create differently to be a better version of herself. So identifying that is a big one. So allow them the grace and the space to navigate that whole reality. That takes a long time too, depending on the person. I mean, my goal for New Year's Day 2023. So 2023, I remember I was in Knoxville with my brother and I had just gotten out of a relationship and I told him, I said, you know what? This next year, I want to feel comfortable in my own skin. That's my highest goal. I want to feel okay and peace. Mm-hmm. And this year, I forgot that that's what my goal was. I had no idea. I completely forgot. And he shared it with me on New Year's Day 2024. And he said, Brittany, look at what your list was. And I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, I have felt so comfortable for like a long time. I forgot that was my goal. Like I feel comfortable in my skin. But it took like now it's been 3 years since my divorce. So mm-hmm. I was still at 2 years at that point. So giving your friend grace and allowing her to go through that path, don't put on more shame. She's going through shame. She's beating herself up. She's going through the what ifs. She's going through the guilt. Even if she doesn't express it, that's what she's going through. So allow her your love and your understanding and your respect and anything that she can feel from you that she's not alone. Because that is one of the biggest fears I would think for everybody, but for women in particular, especially out of long marriages. I mean, when we first got a divorce, I was terrified of being alone. Like you're in your bubble for how many years? You have no idea how the outside world is going to perceive you, especially if you have kids and you're in your 40s now, you're not 20. There's so many real fears with that. And so giving them the opportunity to realize that they are not alone, that goes a really long way, but giving them their space and just a lot of grace. And realizing too, the trauma response, it induces fight or flight. And it's that hormone that goes with it. And a lot of times you might see your friend frozen. You might see your friend that's not doing all the things she did in marriage. Maybe she's not hyperactive anymore. She's not going out all the time, or she's not doing the grocery shopping like she did, or she's not making dinners like she did, or she's not getting to the tasks if she was super organized before. It's literally a response to the trauma because she's frozen. It's just too much. When you take away the security of even not the best marriages and you just take it away, that does something to your foundation where you are in literal survival mode. You are trying to just get food on the table. You are just trying to survive.
Yeah.
So when that takes place, like going to the grocery store is probably not your highest priority. If DoorDash is going to do it, you're going to DoorDash. Maybe taking 2 weeks to do the laundry instead of every day like you used to, that's what you're going to do to survive. And so it's giving that grace and not judgment, because the judgment makes it even worse, because it's adding on that shame. It's adding on that pressure and stress where she becomes even more frozen.
Right.
And I think that that's, from what I've experienced and then what I've seen with other women, that would be the biggest gift in not, and you don't know it until you go through it. So that's the hardest part. So it's like, why aren't you acting like you used to? I miss the old you. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And it's like, by you saying that, you're making me feel like something's wrong with me. Or like I'm feeling a lot even more shame because I know I should be doing that. Mm. But allowing them the space to grow and a space to heal. As they heal, the good news is this. It does get better. It really does. And as that friend heals, as that friend starts to feel comfortable in their skin, as that friend aligns more with God, because the entire journey is about getting closer and closer to God and then surrendering her will and allowing Jesus just to take that will, just allowing that power to take place. The more she does that, the faster she's going to heal. And then you're going to start noticing she's making dinner again. Mm-hmm. But it's not because anybody pressured her, because she has the capacity to do it. She's now filling the space. She's not in survival mode anymore. Mm-hmm. And now she becomes an even better version than she was in marriage. And now you get to see a whole new person.
That's incredible. Tracy and I have a group of friends, and we know some that have gone through a divorce or are currently going through a divorce. And you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And some were like, I knew that this is what I wanted, and they initiated it. And the other one was like, this completely was out of the blue, and holy crap, what happened?
Yeah.
And so very different circumstances. And so trying to be there for them and just like have conversations and like what to say, what not to say. And do I invite them to this with everybody else's married couples and like those kinds of things? Mm-hmm. But I think that it's just comes down to like saying like, hey, I'll sit there with you.
Yes, exactly. It's knowing that somebody is there. And do you understand that there is a period of time, and every person's different on how they handle it. I know for me, and I can only speak to my own experiences, I couldn't be around my married friends for a while because it was a constant reminder of the family I no longer have.
Yeah.
So even though the divorce happened and there were choices made and all the different things, two sides to every story, a million different things that go into it. So if I was invited to something at different points, especially early on, I would choose to stay home because I just couldn't do it. So allowing that space to and not taking anything personally, but still inviting them too, because then there's the element of, wow, I am so alone.
Forgotten.
Yeah, I'm forgotten. They don't want me around anymore. So it's always good to go ahead and extend the invitation, give them the choice.
Yeah.
And they're going to decide for themselves if it's weird or uncomfortable or if they need to stay home or allowing that space.
I think the difference for us is that like the friends that we have, like are close friends.
Yeah.
And so like we can call them on their and they can call us on ours.
Yeah.
And so we have the tough conversations so they do feel comfortable in saying like, look, I just need a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm hiding right now. And this is, and they do that.
And sometimes they say, hey, I'm in this season where I'm headed into isolation.
Yeah.
Just want you to know, not that I don't care about you or that I just need some time. And it's like so good to be able to vocalize that.
That's so good. And you do know intuitively. I mean, after my last relationship in 2020, God, what is it?
This is 24.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I guess it was 22 is when my last, and it was not very long, but I mean, that was my last relationship. I knew I needed a lot of alone time. I just felt it. And so being able to vocalize that, because you do know intuitively, like what you do need to become the next version of yourself and allowing your friend that space to do that. And you do, like there's a lot of sleep that's involved and there's a lot of rest and there's a lot of recalibration. And then out of it, like once you're done, it's like, holy cow, who's this person? Like now it just feels like a fresh, new, amazing, better version.
How do you do that when you're married and have four kids? No. How do you do that again? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, wait, that sounds really nice. Yeah. Do I need to get a divorce?
No.
I know. Just kidding.
I know. Well, I've thought through like all those different concepts, and I have a theory on that as well, actually. So kind of a village mentality. And the thing that's really, I think, unfortunate with our society, the way that it is today in the Western world in America, is that we've gotten away. It's so individualistic. And so it's so compartmentalized. And unfortunately, it doesn't go with the flow of what the best family units actually look like. So I've done some research before in some indigenous regions and just different civilizations. And some of the best civilizations, what they do is the younger, you're in your 20s, and so you can, your body produces babies better, and you're active and you have energy. So you have your babies, but the ones that are actively raising those children are going to be the generation above you. So you're, and not just your parents, but it's the gen, because they have patience, they have kindness, they have wisdom. So they take a very active role in raising those children. So those children are raised with patience and love and wisdom. And of course, the parents have involvement, but their primary role is actually hunting and gathering and doing all the things for the community and really working and doing all that. And they have a participation, but the active raising is of the older generation. And it's this entire village mentality of everybody working together to raise these children. And I was actually talking to this recently. I believe there's a way we can create that within our families without getting divorced. And it's recognizing that, yes, we all do need a break. We all need to pitch in. And it's okay for grandparents to participate. It's okay if neighbors participate, church friends or school. I mean, like, bring in as many people as you can to create your network, your circle, your village, and everybody is on the same page that it's the well-being of this child. Yeah. That's the most important piece. But mothers do need breaks, and so do fathers. Mm. Both people need real breaks. So incorporating that into a regular routine where you don't feel shame for taking it is huge. Once a month, go to a hotel for 2 nights, rest, sleep, whatever, you know. Once a week, every week, get a date night in there where it's just you and your husband as your highest priority. Every day, as soon as your husband comes home, greet him with favor immediately in front of the kids so they see this and see that your priority is your husband always. Allow them to see you talking to your husband for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and without interruption, and the kids know the priority is your marriage. So that way they can respect it and they see how it works. But by allowing each other that modeling behaviors and that respect and giving each other that space on a regular basis, you're less likely to be burned out and overwhelmed.
It's funny, you talking about this made me think that my husband started a new job where he goes to work every day. Which, I mean, he used to work every day. Don't get me wrong, but he was home for years there in the season of like 2 to 3 years, and then went back to work. Probably, I think it was, gosh, it feels like maybe May of 2022. It seemed late. And so then it was, he still had that like desire to be like around, pick up, drop off, you know, helped a lot. And more recently with this job, he's gone very early before the kids, or like kids go to school and he's off, doesn't get home till later in the evening. And I was up stairs with him when he got home and we were talking, and the kids came in asking questions like multiple times. And we were like, oh my gosh, we need a boundary. Like, we can't even talk for 15 minutes. Like, I could just see him getting anxious and like, oh my gosh, I just want to get this thought out. I'm like, yep, transition time. We need a new role here.
So one thing that I had learned, and a piece of, if you want to try this, this might help a little bit. So the kids are possibly behaving that way because there's an insecurity with dad's transition. So the more active children are, it's because that foundation has been moved a little bit. So in creating the foundation for children, they don't know how to vocalize this. But what they need to see more than anything is a solid mom and dad unit. So try this and explain to your kids ahead of time, this is what we're doing. Every night when daddy gets home, we are going to talk on the couch 15 minutes. We can set a timer and you guys can watch us. You can see us. You can be around us, but you cannot interrupt us. This is our 15 minutes, but I want you to see, because they need to see that you're communicating. They need to see that you are happy to see each other. They need to see that you're solid. Because the more that they see that, and if you build that into your daily routine, then they're going to feel a lot more secure because their foundation is secure. And then their behaviors are going to change accordingly because they feel more secure.
That's good.
I remember when we were in Dallas and the Andrew's job situation was just not great. And he'd have to spend an hour and a half in traffic.
Yeah.
But when he got home, he literally had to spend 20 minutes decompressing from all the stress and all the anxiety, like all of that.
Yep.
And so like
it was like, okay, daddy gets his alone time, which was fine. I mean, we knew, we were aware of that. I think that's allowed too. Like,
yes,
you can come at home to your castle and go, I just need to breathe and I just need to clear my head. And then it's like, okay, let's have this conversation or and have that space. But I think, and to your point too, as getting out regularly, and I'm a big fan of parents traveling without their children, like, oh, get away. Show your kids that they are not your the center of your world. Please, for the love, will you show your children that they are not the center of the world? Because there are too many kids out there acting like the universe revolves around them. And it's because their parents do.
They do.
And they cater to everything. And they, well, little, we're just doing this. I mean, that is killing our society.
I agree with that 150,000%. Absolutely. Yeah. It is extremely important. And I think it's changing the focus to an immediate gratification for what you think your child needs in that moment for you to be a good parent. Two, understanding what is your goal? It's almost like a mission statement for your children. What kind of children are you actually creating into adults? And do you want your child to get married and stay married and have a really happy life? And
yeah,
if you do, what are you doing right now to model that for them? That doesn't mean it's always roses and pink posies and Care Bears
and bubblegum.
And bubblegum. However, what they see is what they're going to gravitate towards in adulthood. So if you are making your marriage a priority and they see that, then that's what they're going to do when they're adults and they attract that person into their life. If they see, they want that. They want that respect that you're giving to your spouse. They want to see that because that's what they're absorbing. And so it's not taking away from them because mommy and daddy are talking for 30 minutes and you please don't interrupt. It's showing that love and that companionship, and they're learning that's how they're going to work when they get older. So the more you make your marriage a priority, the less likely your children are going to get divorced when they grow up.
Yeah,
that's good.
And we don't think that it's intentional parenting, being intentional about all things. We've gotten ourselves into a boat where we are just like going by the wayside and not just numbing out or just scrolling. We are scrolling through life and we're not intentional about things anymore. And so we're like, oh, well, it's not a big deal if I didn't cook dinner tonight, or it's not a big deal that this wasn't done, or it's not a big deal. And then those all add up and it's no longer intentional. And before you know it, somebody's resenting something.
So. Well, you know what a really great practice is? And number one is like when you get married and you're going to change, you're going to be married to a different person every like 5 years because that person is all constantly changing.
Amen.
So, and you're constantly changing. So you're going to have like 10 different people. Like you don't have to get a divorce. You're going to be married to 10 different people over a lifetime because you're constantly changing. So you get a little bit of that spice.
As we all should be. And we should be growing together.
Grow together. And how do you approach that? But a couple of different things you can do. There's a difference between beliefs and values. Your beliefs can change depending on new information that comes to the table and depending on your experiences. But your values, that's what stays hardcore, and making sure you're in alignment with that. So with your values, it's periodically changing this depending, like your mission statement. Like it's periodically changing your mission statement based on where your family is at and how you are growing together. So I would recommend definitely once a year on New Year's, right around January, you figure this out together, what I'm about to offer. And then once a month, you do a check-in and possibly even every week. So once a year, you put together, what is your family mission statement? What do you want to achieve with your family long-term? And then what do you want to achieve with your family short-term? What is one simple sentence that identifies and defines your family? And then you talk together your very specific roles. What are you going to do for each other? So as a woman, you know, how we're intrinsically made. We are the nurturers. We are the givers. We create the energy. We create the environment. So that is how we're like intrinsically made as women in our female energy, in our very healthy female energy. So how do we provide that for our home? The man is intrinsically made as the protector, the provider. He's masculine in his masculine energy. He's very organized. He's the doer, right? He's the hunter and gatherer. Go out and do that. So what are some different ways within the home that you can create this for each other and being very intentional with these conversations and being honest about it? So he could come home from a very busy day at work. And what would really help him is if a meal is already made or if the house, you know, is cleaned up so he can walk into a nicer space so that he can just have less on his mind in that moment and allowing that conversation to take place. So, okay, I can do that. That's within me anyway. And then you expressing to him, I don't want to have to do X, Y, Z because it adds stress on me. I don't want to have to figure out the plans for this weekend. Maybe you can organize the date night. I don't want to have to do X. Can you just take control of this so I can follow your lead? And expressing that and allowing him to take that off your plate. So having those conversations, I think, are really important. And identifying and even writing it down, because when you write it down, it's solid. So write down your family mission statement, write down your personal mission statement. Who are you? What's your core? What's your values? Who is he? What's his core? What are his values? And how can you do this together to bring out the best in each other? And the way to do that is trying to remove as much as possible of that fight or flight that goes on in each of our minds. Because the more that we can actually have the freedom of peace in our minds, the more we are able to be who we really are, which are really spectacular human beings. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're going to see the magic come out. And that's when the marriage really gets amazing. And then every week, especially as women, and men need this as well, touch base. How are you feeling about our relationship? How are you feeling about me? Is there anything that I can be doing for you? And do it in a really honest, open space on a weekly basis. So nothing slides under the rug,
You
know, so that you have that constant conversation, communication, and your relationship is always at the forefront because you're always talking about it and you don't forget about it.
Yeah. Checking the pulse.
Yeah.
Checking
what
the
we
pulse.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The application piece.
Yeah.
I need somebody just to tap me on the shoulder and be like, hey, go do this.
Yeah. We were talking about that earlier. The accountability would be great.
Right? Like there should just be a text. We need a text thread. And be like, all right, guys, it's time to check in
on your marriages.
Check in on, yes. You could have like a day of the week, like every Friday when on your date night or whatever. And this is your check-in day. You
know? Yeah.
Like, and you can make it fun. Have questions involved. There's card games that
you
have
can make
questions.
It dirty.
I mean, I was going to say, just about to say you can
have a lot of fun with that.
You can like be naked and do it all.
Yeah, you could be like, you know what? This is version 8 of your wife. So this is what you're going to get today.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah, I'm in this, or the Taylor Swift thing. I'm in the, this is my wife era.
Yes.
This is wife B era. This is my wife C era.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm just moving on.
I don't know what.
I don't know what
season,
era. I actually don't want to ask Andrew or Chris. Do you? I don't need their opinion. I don't want to know what era they think I'm in. So
nope.
But again, it just goes back to being intentional. And you were talking about the peace and having peace. And I know that's something that's very important to Tracy. And Tracy has discovered her peace and what helps cultivate the peace in her family and energy. And how many times it's written in the Bible and just, or be still, be anxious for nothing.
Yeah.
Do not worry. Like these are all things. Those are commands. Mm-hmm. Those are literally commands. So when we are worrying, we're assuming the God position, like I can control, like I could actually do something about it. I can't. I honestly can't. So why am I worrying about it? Doesn't matter. But he's literally commanding me not to worry. Therefore, it's a sin, technically. I mean, in all sins, when you are worrying and you are being anxious, when you are not being courageous and strong and not being still, like those are things that we take for granted or just like it's not a big deal. Like it's fine. We feel like we have to be doing something every second of it every day.
Yeah.
So there's actually a process that you can do that's very systematic and specific.
Okay.
To help, because sometimes it can seem very overwhelming and ambiguous for like, if you are experiencing worry, for example, and how do you not worry? Or like, let's say that you're angry at your husband because he's doing X, Y, Z. How do you get out of that? There's a specific process that you can do that takes away the ambiguity that's step by step. And it will take you to that end result where it is exactly what it says in the Bible of letting go, having faith, trusting in God. Love yourself, love thy neighbor. It's doing all of the things that you're learning in the Bible, but it's how to get there from a 2024 perspective. And there's a number of different ways. And if you give me an example, I can help kind of walk through what that would look like.
This is vulnerable moment.
That's the best way to do it.
Exposing my husband.
I love you.
But we are in therapy. We are so proud to actually say that because our therapist is amazing and we have...
And she's been on this podcast.
Yes, she has. And we've really grown so much in a season that was really difficult for us. And I think that as we've gotten to this place where growing together, we are trying to figure out, okay, what do we really need to like work on? One of the things for me being a voice, having more of a voice, I think we just kind of went through a season where I would just automatically shut down. Ladies, we all do it. We hold our thoughts and then we let it, boil up and stir
suppress.
Over.
Yes. Suppress, suppress,
yes, suppress, suppress. We've already talked about that on the podcast. I like to suppress. And just being more specific and using a voice. And so last week we were driving to a KU game, just having a normal conversation. And he said something about someone else, giving an example. And I was like, actually, that's the story that you just said, the story that I say in my head, which is basically like, I don't do what I should do, write a book, or obviously I'm doing a podcast, but or just do more things, because I'm like, the story in my head is that I'm not capable, or I'm not called to, or
I'm not credible,
like the imposter syndrome type thing. And he was like, how is it that you can believe that? He's like, anything you touch, you're good at and you make it a big thing, like your Plexus business, your podcast, your the way you potty trained the kids, just on and on and on. And it was like almost a negative thing. And I was like, is this your way of giving me compliments?
Yeah. You're yelling all these things that I'm good at.
And words of affirmation is my thing.
But tone counts.
Yeah, no. And so we talked about it in therapy. I was like, well, I love that he said those things. And that was very nice. But in just a natural way, it doesn't say it in our daily life.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. Absolutely. Okay. From what I'm hearing from that, so I want to reflect back what I heard to make sure that I got it correct. So he is giving you a perspective of what he sees about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not lining up with what you see about yourself. And what you'd like to hear and what you'd like to see are the positive things on a more regular basis.
Yes.
And you felt like maybe because that's not something that you receive on a regular basis, maybe even in that moment, it was a difficult way for you to receive.
To receive it. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So is
like,
that kind
I liked
of...
all that what you said, but I didn't receive it.
You didn't receive it.
Positively, okay. Softly. Yeah.
Any of it. Okay. So here's a couple of things that we can work through with that. Number one, it's understanding people in general. Okay. So it's understanding like a soul purpose. Okay. So the first thing is that, and then also the nutrients. So there's a couple of things. So as an analogy, imagine this, that God is the sun.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So within the sun, there's a bajillion infinity number of little flames inside of the sun, right? And so all those flames are love, and it's all within the sun. So the flame that's in the sun that's surrounded by flames, does it know that it is surrounded by love? Can it value love?
I'm going to say no.
No, because that's all it knows, right?
Right. That, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no okay. negative.
Exactly. So let's say that flame is our souls. Right? So what if we identify in the front end, what is our purpose? Why are we even here? Okay. So what if God was like, I want to give you the gift of experiencing love? Well, how can you experience it if that's all you're surrounded with, right? So what if the choice of coming to this planet was to have a dual reality, right? You have to have dualities. You have to know the opposite of something in order to appreciate it. So let's say you came here and you're like, you know what? I want to experience forgiveness. I want to experience, what are the verbs of love? I want to experience
gratitude.
What else? I want to experience, what is another verb of love?
Happiness.
Okay. And the act of happiness.
Yeah.
Right. Appreciation.
To be happy. Yep.
You just said gratitude. Okay.
Yeah,
so there's a number of
kind, okay. Love is.
Yes. Kindness. You want to experience kind. You want to experience courageousness. All of these things, right?
Right.
So before you can experience it, to know it, you also have to know the opposite of it.
Or the lack of,
exactly. So what if, like, you and your husband, first of all, you're here to help each other learn and to experience love. So number one, understanding that as a purpose for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is the case, so if there's anything that your spouse does that creates a trigger emotion inside of you, then what if in a divine way that's purposed for you to eventually end up experience a moment of love? So maybe the opportunity for you to experience forgiveness because he did this for you. And some of the hardest, hardest things, because at the end of the day, we're all these flames from the sun. We're still love. So then the hardest thing we can do as a mother is discipline our child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we still love our child?
I can discipline.
I can too. And I always say this hurts me more than it hurts you.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we love our children so much. So on a soul subconscious level, what if we're here to help each other experience love? And one of the hardest things we can do for each other is to cause that other person pain. But we're doing that on a soul level, on a purpose that we don't understand, that's very subconscious, to actually allow that person to experience the opportunity for forgiveness or for the opportunity to get closer to God and realize the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one truth to kind of know and understand.
Well, and God uses all things for the good of those who are called to Him. So that's very much like,
yeah,
you have to feel the void of something to feel.
Absolutely.
To feel it.
Absolutely. And along with that, He's trying to give you His idea of you,
mm-hmm.
right? But that's not your idea of you. So what we end up doing a lot of times is we assign the "you made me feel"
mm-hmm.
that yeah. sentence, right?
We practice yeah. that.
You made me feel. Okay. The reality is this: a trigger is what I like to call it, is anything negative that you experience, whether it's shame, it's guilt, it's any negative feeling or emotion that you feel is a trigger. What if that trigger is actually the alarm going off for you to take a look at the narrative you're telling yourself, to find the base of why you're telling yourself that narrative, and an opportunity for you to heal it and find the truth? Because the truth is, right? Truth, love is truth. Love is God. God equals love equals truth. All good things come from God. All peace is from God. It's all synonymous, right? It's mm-hmm. all the same thing.
Yep.
So in order to feel that peace, you have to discover the truth. So in that moment, with the example you gave, what I would do is go through a process with you to help you discover the truth. Because what I'm hearing is that you feel like all of those compliments your husband gave you were not true.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Like you couldn't receive it because you were rejecting the compliments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I would do is take a look at it this way, because whatever we feel is actually a mirror of how we're feeling about ourselves. So this is the way we're going to get there. Give me one sentence that he said to you, just one feeling. Let's do blame first. So I, something, and then blame. So blame him on something with that sentence from that experience you had. Give me a sentence that you're blaming him on how you feel. I feel X because of.
Okay. I felt he was negative about my goodness.
Okay. So allow yourself to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So the first step is allowing that blame to take place. You felt negative. So say it one more time.
Yeah, I actually am good at that. And I am good at that. But why are you
yelling in the mat?
Yeah, yelling at me about it, like being negative about it.
And how'd that make you feel when he did that? Mm-hmm. You perceived that.
Unappreciated.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like
undervalued.
And well, if you actually believe that, then why haven't you told me that before?
Okay, so we're going to bring it back on you. Okay, so let's get it down to an even better feeling. So you felt unappreciated, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so say, he made me feel unappreciated.
He made me feel unappreciated.
Okay, so experience that in privacy. We won't go through it right now because it's a podcast. But if right. we were to do this separately, what we would do is we would take as long as we needed for you to feel it
mm-hmm.
and for you to have all the images in your mind where you felt unappreciated.
Unappreciated.
Mm-hmm. And you would come up with those examples. We would write them down. You would go through it. Okay.
That could be a long list.
The more, the better, right?
Is it just unappreciated by the husband or the children?
Yeah, well, right? We're going to stick with one example at a time. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, only one right? at a time. So we would stick with that. And then what we would do is this. So there's the top and the bottom. So then we're going to change it. So he made me feel unappreciated. Okay. We'll go through that entire exercise. Next, we're going to replace the word he with I. I made me feel unappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you would do is sit with that and you would think and allow yourself to feel how you made yourself feel unappreciated and allow yourself to experience all the examples in your life of how you are not appreciating yourself and take on that ownership. Why are you unappreciated? What are the things you've done in your life that you're not appreciating yourself?
Mm, yeah.
And really, really feel it. So you'd go through those two examples. And then the next thing you would do is you would switch the bottom part. So you would switch it with, I don't feel appreciated. I made me feel unappreciated too. I do feel appreciated. And you would think and sit down for a minute, all the examples in your life of how you do actually appreciate yourself. What do you do specifically? We'd write them down. The last step with that part of it is you'd replace the top part to, he does make me feel appreciated. And what you would do is you would think through all of the things that he does that actually is acts of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And then going through all of these steps, you're allowing yourself to get to the point where you do see an actual truth. And then there's another step that goes along with it. So once you get to that level, it's going through the act of forgiveness. So you actively ask for forgiveness to him. And we would do this in a session together and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to you. I'm sorry to him. And you would actively express forgiveness to yourself for making yourself feel unappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
You would actively forgive him for making you feel unappreciated. And then from there, once we get through all of those feelings and those emotions, then we would go to love. Okay, so I forgive you. I love you, right? And you would actively love him and you would actively love yourself. Both are very important.
Yeah.
And then the next part is going to be gratitude. I am so thankful for you that I got to see the truth, because by the end of this, you are seeing all the examples of what he does actually do, that he's appreciating you, because mm-hmm. you're seeing the truth of it. And then you're giving gratitude to him. You're giving gratitude to yourself. You're getting gratitude to the situation. And then from there, you're actively letting go. So surrender. And that's where you bring Jesus in. You're like, Jesus, I let go. Mm-hmm. I let go of all this. I let go of my control. Me trying to figure this out, me worrying about this, my sadness, I let go of absolute control. Use me as your vessel. Your will be done. Okay. And you actively go through that. So it's surrender. And then the last thing is active faith. I allow for the next steps to come through me. You're going to work through me. And I'm going to allow that to take place. And when you get through all of those steps at the end of that process, and it can take as long or as little as it needs to take, the feeling that is left is a feeling of peace. And when you feel that peace, that means that you've discovered the truth and you've changed the entire narrative. You changed the story. Another piece to that is also realizing that at the end of the day, there's two lies that we tell ourselves that we carry throughout our entire adulthood. Peeling back this onion all the way through, we can have the most amazing childhoods. You don't have to have a traumatic childhood. It could be as simple as you're a six-year-old and your mother took a phone call and the narrative you told yourself was mommy doesn't love me anymore. If mommy doesn't love me because she took the phone call, then I'm not worthy of love. I'm not loved. I'm not worthy of love. Those are two basic problems that very, if you peel everything back, peel it back, mm-hmm. peel it back, yeah. peel it back. And then it's some story in childhood. So then there's an entire exercise of going back to the childhood version of yourself and telling the truth. Six-year-old you, unless you know to change the narrative of the reality of what happened that day, you're going to operate from that space for the rest of your life until you actually take the time and go, wait a minute, little Tracy, mommy just took a phone call. She was talking to the neighbor. Of course she still loves you. Look at what else she made you peanut butter and jelly for lunch. She did this, she mm-hmm. did this, she did this. And then you're rewriting the narrative then. You're loving yourself then. You're going through the entire process of loving you then. And it creates this healing within you that transforms you into as an adult Tracy. And so there's this entire process you can use with all of it.
And so that's fascinating, by the way. And I love how it was always brought back to me.
I feel like that was all you right there. And I just got to witness it. I'm thankful for that.
Well, and that was probably a lot of words. Probably for
no, but it's a process.
Yeah.
And speaking of, for this example too, this is something that you offer.
I offer
coaching and consulting individuals yes. for relationships, from transitions to workplace
yes.
to home life. And so this is something that you work with people for.
I do. And I've discovered at the end of the day, whether we are in a professional setting or we are in a personal setting, we're still human beings. So if we're having a struggle or needing to overcome something in a professional setting, it's because there's something inside of us that we need to address. So the program that I've developed, it addresses you in a professional situation. It also addresses you in a personal situation. And I did a little bit of a beta test with my own team in my restaurant about a year ago with us. And through this exercise, through this workshop that we did, we found immediate results within 24 hours. Immediate. I got feedback from the team and the revenues were higher. They were able to have higher tips that day. The way they handled their tables were night and day difference. Their job satisfaction, like all of it while we were doing this program, was a huge game changer in a professional environment. What I've noticed with this process, because I've done this for myself ever since my divorce. Mm-hmm. So I've discovered and kind of fine-tuned this over the last 3 years. And I will stop myself. If I feel anger, there was an example 2 weeks ago. I was on a phone call. I felt unbelievable, pure anger. Like, I need to get to peace immediately, because any action that comes from a not a place of peace is not from God. So then if your action is from that space, that's creating a very different result than if you're coming from a space of peace. So how do you get to a space of peace and take control of your own energy as fast as possible? So I've gone through this process so often, I can now identify and get it down to 30 seconds. So I went from extreme anger to unbelievable peace within 30 seconds. So the more that you can practice and condense this process, it actually is unbelievable when you're in a moment of emotion that attacks you out of nowhere. But yeah, it's been phenomenal. It's been life-changing. It's been game-changing. It definitely, it's realistic tools that you can use every day in any situation.
Well, we had talked about, I mean, peace has been like my word for like the last 2 years, having had years.
Peace is Tracy's mission statement.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like, just... and it, a lot of that I think comes from just chaos for 4 kids and when we moved here and working so crazy and COVID and homeschooling and a daughter with anxiety, like when it all, like it was just, I felt the craziest myself. And I'm like, there was no place for peace. And one of the things I noticed when we would go on vacation, my husband and I would still go away almost every year. When we would be gone, I'm like, I am so at peace and so healthy and sleeping and just happy. It's like, and I remember when I came back, it was a year ago. I think it was October of 2022. I'm like, what do I have to do to keep this peace? Like, I felt so good. And it's really been since then, like October of 2022, that I'm like, okay, I'm going to get answers for this. But like, my goal is that I just have to keep peace, because I know that's where I thrive and where I love best and where I'm patient and where I'm kind. And
peace is where we are our healthiest.
Yeah.
So what if you gave yourself permission? If you know you are the best mother, the best wife, the best business person, when you feel that peace, what if you gave yourself permission to say, you know what, my highest priority every single day is to achieve that level of peace every morning and every night for my family, for my husband, for my children, for this. And then it's identifying very clear steps with how you get there. I'll use myself, for example. Every morning I get up way before the kids. I have to have either my coffee or tea. I have to have my prayer time. Ideally, I would love to exercise, because that releases stress. Mm-hmm. It wakes up your brain. You have to, you shower, things like that. So identify for you, where does your brain get to that point of peace? Where is it woken up enough to where you can operate from that level? And that is your highest priority.
Yeah.
And give yourself that permission. And it's not creating an extra stress on yourself that you have to do X, Y, Z. But if you know to hit a level of stress and you're just having a day and you know that, like, if you need to, I don't know, get a massage or whatever you need to do, if you need to take an hour, give yourself permission to create that healthy boundary around you and say, kids, mommy needs an hour. I will be back. I will come and talk to you in an hour. I'm going to go and get to my level of peace, and then I'll be the best mommy for you ever. But allow yourself that space and give yourself that boundary, because what ends up happening is they will respect that. And then you do come back with peace and they see how you get to that level. And they're going to end up learning from you on how to do that as well. How to love. That is an act of loving yourself, is giving yourself the permission to get to that level of peace every day.
Yeah. I was just telling the friends that we were all with today, I've been doing the Bible recap and absolutely loving getting up every single morning. Haven't missed a day reading the Bible every morning, 20 to 30 minutes.
I know. Amazing. I'm proud of you.
I am so proud of myself. And you should see how colorful it is. I'm writing in my Bible. She's like encouraged me to write in my Bible. I have all these journaling pages and I wouldn't do it. I would literally write in the journal next to me. I'm like, what is my problem? But I'm doing it. And it is like, I told them when we were all talking today, I was like, as long as I do that, I win the day. Like, it's just that's my win of the day, is just that I'm getting that done. No matter what. And I mean, I've done it. I literally, that night we went to KU, I was telling you about that moment. On the way home, he listened to music and I did it that night because I hadn't got to it that whole day. But I was like, I'm not going home. I'm going to bed until this is done. And I did it in the car on the way home at like 10 o'clock at night. It's pouring down rain. It was actually really peaceful listening to him worship and me doing my Bible study. But the point being, like, it is my one thing.
Yeah.
And that's just what I'm starting with.
Thing. Start with one thing and don't put the pressure on you have to do all these things. Went through a season of life and it was like, I just needed to take a walk. Every time I felt anxious, I had to walk and I would walk until I felt peace. So sometimes my walk was an hour and a half, but that was the one thing I would do. Would I take a cold shower and like do the frozen tundra plunge and like do all the things they tell you to do? Like, no. And it doesn't require all of that for you to get to that space. Sometimes it's just one thing. And if you give yourself that permission, then it's okay.
Yeah. Well, and you realize the, you know what the result is after you've done it. Like, I know that I will feel this way. Like, I know I will get the peace if I do this. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't feel like I have to.
Exactly. Yeah. And then also giving yourself grace too, because as women, let's just talk about it. I mean, we do have monthly hormone cycles and different things. And recognize,
oh, we could be here for another hour.
I mean,
and start going with that.
But it's like, it's giving yourself that peace. Like if you do have a really off day, look at your calendar and go, oh, that's why.
And
then be like, okay, there's nothing I did wrong. Mm. Don't allow that shame to come in and be like, sometimes it's just hormones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's those feelings of like, oh, today's this way and I don't feel this way. And it's like, oh, that's why though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll go away in a couple of days.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Don't make any big decisions.
Yes, no decisions.
No decisions. Yes.
Don't tell anyone off. Don't complain about anything
don't
in this
quit
window.
Your job. Don't. Yes. Everything is, we need to do an episode on that, on the different weeks of your cycle so you know what to.
Yeah.
So, well, this has been incredible, Brittany. Like, this has been eye opening and just, I've loved it and just getting to find practical steps, but you being so open and sharing your story and how like God does use all things.
Yeah.
And for the good of those who love him, and he's clearly using you.
Thank you.
To bless others with your journey. How can people find you on social media or email? You tell them how to find you so they can use your services.
Absolutely. So the fastest and easiest way is just send me a text message. Honestly.
Amen.
That's the easiest way.
Don't send me an email. Send me a text.
I know. Like, I love the idea of email. My friend Hannah will tell you, oh my Lord, look at her inbox. It's insane. That's one of my 2024 goals is to make sure it's cleaned up every day. But my cell phone is great. It's still an area code from North Carolina. So area code 828-485-8480.
That'll be in the show notes for you.
And if you do prefer to email me right now, you can do britvallis@yahoo.com. So it's B-R-I-T as in Tom, Vallis, V-A-L-A-S @yahoo.com.
And that will also be in the show notes.
Yes. So either one. But if you want a faster response, just send me a text message.
Yeah.
And I'll respond right away.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for giving us an evening of yours. This has been a lot of fun. And until next time, housewives.
Have a great week.
Thanks.
Bye.
Whether we made you laugh or cry today, we pray you feel appreciated, bolder and braver than yesterday, stronger and more faithful for tomorrow, and living in who you were made to be today.
Join our online community on Facebook. Link in the show notes. And be sure to review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Until next time, housewives, we give you permission to walk confidently, free, and to be intentional in your slippers or stilettos.